I'm looking forward to this morning. And one of the things over the last particularly couple of weeks that I have been thinking a lot about is keys. Been thinking a lot about keys. I've handed back my keys to the coffee shop. I have just yesterday we handed back the keys to our house here in Lismore. Probably a month or so ago, we took possession of keys for our new house in Musselbrook. And today, I'm handing back keys that I've been given for the church. And I was going to use them as a constant visual reminder this morning, because I want to enter into this image of keys. But I just so happened to leave them in our other car, which is parked at Zach and Amy's place in Casino. And so I'll be going back there today and getting those keys and bringing them back. But I couldn't quite duck back there. So I'm going to use these keys just as a reminder. We've been thinking a lot about keys. And you know, more often than not, it's the people who are most trusted in an organization who are given a set of keys to the building. And those same people actually hold the most power. I mean, they can literally, physically decide to let people in or to keep people out. It's a lot of power. While we can say that, you know, we can think of a set of keys, you know, as a tangible, physical kind of privilege and responsibility, particularly, you know, of leadership, there can also be symbolic keys as well that we can't see, but they're still as powerful and as significant. Keys of responsibility, of authority, of influence and access. I mean, when you think about it, keys, they provide access to physical rooms, but they also provide access to strategic meetings, significant decisions, and they provide access to those central roles and places of authority. And chances are, the more keys that you have, the more power you tend to possess. And when we give people keys, we're giving them that power, and it's saying something about them as well. When we give people keys, it says something about how we see them. You know, I still remember the first time my parents gave me the keys to the family car. It was a big blue Falcon wagon that we had, and I remember feeling the weight of that responsibility as those keys sat in my hand for the first time. Particularly so because my older brother actually crashed the family car, that same car, when he first got his license not that long before me. So, you know, there was a sense of responsibility with those keys in my hand. But it was an expression of my parents' trust in me. So here's the keys. Yes, you can drive the car on your own. I did have my license at the time too, just in case you were thinking my parents were completely irresponsible. I did also have my license at the time. But they handed me those keys as an expression of trust in me. And when you think about it, we don't have to just give people keys to express our trust and confidence in them. We express our trust and confidence in people in a whole range of different ways. And, you know, there's a story in the Bible that I want us to look at this morning. And it tells us of a story where of a time when Jesus expressed his trust and confidence in someone. It's the story of what happened between Jesus and Peter on the beach after Jesus' resurrection. It's found in John chapter 21. If you've got a Bible and you want to flick there, the passage, the verses we're going to look at will go up on the screen behind me as well. But Peter, you know, Peter had been with Jesus since the beginning of Jesus' public ministry. Peter answered that call of Jesus. When Jesus said, "Come follow me," Peter answered. He dropped everything and followed Jesus. Peter had always been in the middle of the action around Jesus. And you pick that up as you read through those gospel stories. He always seems to prop up where there's a bit of action in and around Jesus. And Peter actually was the one that spoke on behalf of the rest of the followers of Jesus. When Jesus was talking and asking them, who do people say that I am? And they list all these things. And who do you say that I am? He said that to his group of followers. And it's Peter that stood up and spoke on behalf of the rest of them, saying, we believe that you are the Son of God, the sent one of God. And John looked at that story last Sunday and unpacked that for us. Peter was, he was the man. He was, you know, Jesus gave him the name Peter, the rock. And he was right there. But it all kind of fell apart, didn't it? It all kind of fell apart for Peter. And we walk into this text in John chapter 21, after Jesus had risen from the dead, and we find Peter kind of wallowing in the aftermath of his triple denial of Jesus. So let's have a look at these verses. And then we're going to reflect on them a little bit as well. Starting at verse 15 of chapter 21. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said, follow me. I wonder if Peter thought this conversation was going to go different. I mean, in the verses before those we just read, we read about the encounter where the disciples were out on the boat, they were fishing, and Jesus was walking along the beach early in the morning. And when they realized who it is, Peter was keen to see him. I mean, Peter didn't even wait for the boat to land on the beach. He jumped out, ran to Jesus. But I wonder if Peter thought this was going to go differently. It says that Jesus was cooking breakfast on a coal fire. It just so happened to be that it was also a coal fire where Peter was warming himself that night he denied Jesus. And I wonder if the smell of the coal fire on the beach took him back to the coal fire in that courtyard where he denied even knowing Jesus three times. You know, that night Jesus was inside on trial in a kangaroo court. You know, these guys were just trying to accuse him and get him out of the way, to not really follow proper process. They were just wanting to, get rid of him. So he's being inside, grilled and accused by people, and by people that had the authority and the power to do him great harm. And outside, Peter was warming himself by this coal fire, and some people who were gathered around that same fire who had no authority or power to do Peter any great harm, no power or really even authority to report him. They asked him, weren't you around with this Jesus guy who's inside? And Peter three times denies even knowing Jesus as he warmed himself around that fire. I mean, it's pretty bad betrayal and abandonment. At a time when Jesus was alone, he had no support. Peter can't even bring himself to identify with Jesus around a fire, as he's warmed himself around a fire with some other randoms. You know, there weren't people who could report him or do him any harm, but he couldn't even bring himself to identify with Jesus. I just wonder if the smell of that coal fire on the beach took him back there and he thought the conversation he was going to have with Jesus would be something different to what it was. Perhaps he thought Jesus would berate him. Perhaps he thought Jesus would say, Peter, how could you do that? How could you do that to me? But here, something significant is happening. Jesus invites Peter to enter into the work of helping to feed the sheep. Symbolic metaphor that is often used for the people of God. There is this commissioning into leadership of Peter. And while Jesus is the good shepherd, capital G, capital S, feeding and caring for his flock, Jesus here hands the keys of the work of the kingdom to his followers to help care for and lead others. And it's a risky idea. I mean, you don't have to read too many of the accounts in the Gospels to kind of see the disciples and the followers of Jesus that he chose didn't quite get it a lot of the time. And they kind of, you know, you can imagine a number of times throughout those accounts where Jesus would probably have the eye roll going. You know, my 6-year-old son Emmerich rolls his eyes. Does my head in. But you can imagine throughout the Gospels, there's a number of times where Jesus would be just, giving them the keys of the kingdom to partner in that work. It's a risky idea. But we read in these verses that first there's reconciliation that happens. Jesus doesn't berate him or say how disappointed he was or he doesn't load Peter up with the guilt. He doesn't ignore the wrong that Peter did either. I mean, notice that Jesus called him Simon, son of John. That's actually the name that Peter had before Jesus gave him the name Peter. So Jesus is almost taking him back to the very beginning. So Jesus isn't glossing over what Peter had done. He's not ignoring what Peter had done. But he kind of addresses it in a very Jesus kind of way, doesn't he? Peter denies Jesus 3 times. Jesus asks him to reaffirm his love and commitment 3 times. Jesus doesn't say to him, and don't you ever, ever do that again. Jesus doesn't say to him, look, I don't know if I can trust you anymore. There's reconciliation that happens. And secondly, amongst that reconciliation, Jesus expresses trust and confidence in Peter, even if Peter has some growing to do. Jesus doesn't say, when you have all the right experience, or when you have all the right knowledge and you have a flawless character, then you can be part of what I'm doing. You know, once you've kind of got those qualifications down pat, then I'll invite you into this work. Jesus doesn't say that. Jesus reminds Peter that despite his past failure, there is still work to be done. You know, Jesus is saying to Peter in this moment on that beach, I choose you. I'm giving you the keys. You have what it takes. Go for it. You know, so often I think what captures and holds hostage our attention are our failures. Those feelings that we have, that we're just not quite good enough. But here in this text, Jesus sees the worth in Peter as a necessary contributor to the kingdom, regardless of his failings. In spite of his flaws, Jesus sees the necessary contribution that Peter has to make. You know, Jesus didn't feel sorry for Peter, and so just kind of gave him some pseudo role to help him feel better about himself. That it was, you know, in fact, just Jesus doing everything, but Peter had a title, so he felt like he was involved. Well, that's not what's going on at all. It reminds me of those big remote control cars you can get for kids now, where they're sitting in the car and the steering wheel moves, but ultimately you're sitting there, you're controlling it, but they think they're driving. That's not what's going on here. Jesus isn't being condescending to Peter and kind of still controlling everything, but giving him the sense that he's doing something. No, Jesus gives him the keys. Jesus saw the potential in Peter more than Peter could, and he recognized the necessary contribution Peter had to make to the unfolding kingdom of heaven. A scholar and New Testament theologian, N.T. Wright, he reflects on this passage this way. He writes, "A fresh challenge, a new commission, time to learn how to be a shepherd, time to feed lambs and sheep, to look after them. Not only is this a fresh commission, not only is Jesus trusting Peter to get back to fruitful work and to turn his undoubted though wobbly love for Jesus to good account, it is more. Jesus is sharing his own work, his own ministry with Peter." And I think this raises really good questions for us about who gets to lead. Who should be invited to lead? Is it only experienced leaders? Flawless leaders? Leaders who have really proven themselves? Or is responsibility part of the way that grace works itself through the church? In other words, who gets keys? Now, you might be thinking that this has nothing to do with you, that you're not the one that's giving out keys, but in a way, you are. See, it's not just the deacons as the leadership or John as the lead pastor who gives responsibility, authority, influence, access. You each play a part in that. I mean, it's an expression of one of our distinctives as Baptists. The priesthood of all believers, that there is no more or less of God's calling and spirit in any of us who follow Jesus. And in fact, when we gather collectively to discern what God is doing, there's a greater sense and clarity around on what God is doing and saying than if someone's just sitting in their room on their own. We discern together. So in fact, each of you and all of you collectively give keys. You discern and advocate for, you cheer on those who step up in responsibility, who are given influence and authority. This is, in fact, what we can do for others around us, whatever our level of influence is. We take what keys we have in regards to our voice, our influence, our responsibility. We take those keys that we have and we pass them on to others. You know, this passage shows us the invitation that's extended to all of us as followers of Jesus to take the keys of the kingdom offered to us and to use them. And Jesus, through Peter, is saying that to each of us. But it also prompts us to recognize those around us, recognize their gifts, the opportunities that they have and the potential contributions that they are to make. Not just recognize them, but actually inviting them into the role that they get to play in the journey of this faith community into God's future. To take a key off our keychain and give it to someone else for them to use. Now, maybe you think that you don't have any keys. You don't have any keys to give. That doesn't make sense. You might be rolling your eyes at me right now. I don't know. But if you're an adult and you're part of this church, you at the very least have keys of voice. You can be heard and listened to relatively easily. You have access and understanding to participate right across the life of this church. If you're an adult part of this church, you have access to participate right across the life of this church in meetings, in growth groups, in our gatherings here on Sunday. It's all aimed at you and gives you the access. You have those keys. There's some new research that's come out in the last decade or so from the Fuller Youth Institute in the United States, and it shows that people aged between 15 and 29 are looking for a role to play right now in the church. And they want to learn it alongside other leaders who can show them the way. And if we think about the keys thing, those leaders are taking keys off their keychain and handing them over. Keys of responsibility, authority, influence, and access. For those of you who have been around churches for a while, there are plenty of examples of churches that are growing old. But as the Fuller Youth Institute have said, there's just as many opportunities for churches to grow young. They have this whole bucket load of resources around for churches who desire to grow young. To see more young people step into their unique calling of loving God and loving people through the local church. But you know, growing young as a church has less to do with doing things for young people and more about giving them keys. Many churches are actually seeking to revisit the role that all ages play in the work of the kingdom through their local expression of their local church. Now, over the last 3.5 years, a number of you have said to me, this is an old church. There's no young people, no kids around, no families. To an extent, there may be truth. This may be an old church, but there are people of all ages, including young adults, youth, and kids that are part of this very church. And they are people who have many things to contribute to the leadership and direction of this church. And that perception is not going to change unless there is intentional and strategic efforts to grow young. Now, I hadn't had a look at the new roster. I kind of knew my name was only going to be on there once, so I didn't look at it. But what a practical example this morning on the platform throughout our songs. There are young people here with contributions to make. But I don't mean it. I'm not saying that's where it stops. I'm saying there are people here who will... who have the potential and the contribution to make in leadership and future direction of this church. You know, we believe in a God of purpose. We believe in a God of order. A God who does not make mistakes. A God who does not make junk. And He has made each of you and has called all of you together for such a time as this. In this place, at this time, for His purposes and plans as part of His unfolding kingdom. We cannot be those who think we have to wait for something. We can't be those that think, oh, we just got to wait for more youth. We've just got to wait for more families. We've just got to wait for more pastors. We've just got to wait for more whatever. We can't think that. We can't go into that mindset. Instead, you need to be asking, who is here? How can we fulfill our calling in this place at this time? You know, as we think more specifically about our context here, you know, some questions to ponder, some questions to think about how young people participate here. Are the young people amongst us being given shared responsibility in the life of the church? Are they being invited to contribute to the movement, future, and present-day direction of Lismore Baptist Church? And more broadly, does everyone in this collective of followers of Jesus have the sense that they have a role to play in that work? You know, sharing leadership and responsibility with young people is messy. But there's collective creativity and energy to be gained when we invite young people to be co-participants in the mission, vision, and direction of the church. And in doing so, we fulfill the call to make disciples who use their gifts with confidence. And as I was thinking about this week, you know, schools, primary schools, high schools, universities, they're all starting to get this. I mean, the number and growth of student representative groups and councils from primary schools up is just growing. They're giving they're giving the kids and the young people the influence, the authority, the access. Remember, just like every single other human being who has ever walked the face of this planet, bar Jesus Christ himself, they're going to make mistakes. You know, there's the for young people, there's that pressure of balancing school and home and church responsibilities and uni and young people, you know, going through significant developmental changes in their friendships, in their schools, in their physical bodies. But they're in amongst all of that. There is great opportunity to guide our young people towards mature decision making. You know, in any sort of leadership development process or undertaking, it's really important to get the balance between authority and responsibility right. Think about it this way. Now, I've actually worked not in Lismore. This is not about my time in Lismore, but when I was in Sydney, in a different area of work, I worked in a place where often managers and those under those managers were given all the responsibility to bring in the money, to do things well, but they were given no authority to do it their way. They were told exactly how they should do it. They were given all the responsibility, but no authority to actually do what they were asked to do. Now you can imagine the revolving door of managers out of a place like that. It's important in any leadership development context to get that balance right, to actually give authority, to say, this is what we're trying to achieve. This is the things that we're working towards. We're all agreeing on that. But here's the keys. You do it your way. You use your own intellect, your own creativity, your own gifts and skills and connections, and go for it. But I take the responsibility. I'm still responsible. And so I seek to then provide support and accountability and, picking up pieces and plugging holes when they appear. But we need to be able to get that balance right, to give authority and take responsibility. Because it's horrendous the other way around. And when you think about it, Peter would not make our top list of people to lead the church and change the world, would he? You don't have to read too much about his story in the Gospels to go, I don't think he's got it. But Jesus chose Peter, warts and all. Jesus chose him. And Jesus has chosen you, each of you, regardless of your age, regardless of your experience, the length of time that you've been following Jesus, as individuals and as a collective, sometimes it can be just about taking that first step. It can be overwhelming. But remember, Jesus chose Peter, warts and all. And sometimes it's just about taking that first step. So think about how all ages can be heard and invited to contribute to the life of this church. Think. How could we do that? Ask. Ask those around you, especially young people. Ask them things like, what makes you want to be a part of Lismore Baptist Church? What would you love to see us do more? How can we better listen? What do you think your contribution could be in 2020? And listen. You know, as I wrap up, I want to share a short clip with you that challenges us as grown-ups about how we see, listen to, and invite kids and young people. It's a video resource from the Global Children's Forum, which is a worldwide movement, and they have a vision to see children everywhere walking with Jesus. I want to share this. It goes for a couple of minutes. Share this clip, and then I'm going to come and wrap up. Thanks.
I'm not a grown-up. I don't understand everything, but I can do some things that grown-ups find difficult to do. I am a remote controller for my grandma. I turn on the TV and change the channels for her. I'm a babysitter. I watch my baby brother, play with him, feed him sometimes, but changing diapers, I'll let my mom do that. I'm a home expert. I can operate the washing machine. I'm a communication specialist. I can do my projects, learn things, play games, and watch videos. I want to be a teacher. I want to teach about Jesus, but my parents want me to wait till I'm a grown-up. I want to pray for sick people. My grandparents tell me to be young. I want to tell my friends about Jesus. And my teacher says, now is not the right place or time. What I don't understand is, I'm not too young for technology, studies, sports, activities, or housework. Then why am I still a child when it comes to doing God stuff or spiritual things? If I can pray at home, why can't I pray with my friends? If I can discuss spiritual things at home, why can't I do it with others? Yes, I'm a child. Yes, I'm 8 years old. But I can make a difference. I love Jesus. And he told all of us, including me, a child, to tell about him to others. Will you let me? Would you walk with my friends and I as we learn to walk with Jesus?
Friends, we need to be hearing and including the voices, gifts, and ideas of all ages. The same is true for youth and young emerging adults. We need to be handing over the keys, not just seeking to do things for young people, like we're simply a dispenser of religious goods and services. But we need to be giving them the keys. And you know, young people of all ages, they aren't the future church. They are the church today. We need to be looking for opportunities to really listen and include voices of young people and people of all ages. My hope and prayer for you all, that God might bless Lismore Baptist Church in 2020 and beyond. Let me pray. Almighty God, amongst all the emotions and thoughts, I pray this morning that you will help us carry with us the question, the opportunity, or the truth that you are impressing on each of us and all of us today. And I pray that with confidence that you will do that because of your great purpose and love for each of us and all of us as a collective. And we pray that in Jesus' name. Amen.